Hello and welcome back to Women's Wellness Radio. I'm your host, Bridget Danner, and happy to have you here as always. We've got another great interview for you today. Our guest today is Andrea Maxim, and she's a naturopathic physician from Ontario, Canada. She's also the author of Maximized Health, the New Intelligent System for Optimal Digestion and Hormones. And the two of us are going to be talking today about something I'm really excited about, which is gut infections, from candida to parasites, and how to know if you may be having an issue with one of these, and then all sorts of more about that, treatments and testing and that kind of thing. So really an exciting topic that I think people should know more about. So first of all, welcome, Andrea.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, I was reading over your book, which is great. And is it free on your website? Did I see that right?
It isn't free.
Okay.
But typically, if people want to, like, if for instance, if they're listening to a podcast like this one, if they want to get in touch with me, I don't mind sending them the downloadable version for free. But if you're like me and you like to have something tangible in your hand, something to kind of flip through the pages, you can purchase that on my website and I will mail it to you pretty much within the next couple of hours after the order.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. Sorry for that mix up. I thought,
that's okay.
She's just giving this away. On your site is called the Maxim Movement. We'll talk more about your resources later. One thing I read that I thought was really interesting from your book was when you were an early teen, you were overweight and you said covered in acne front and back. And you made a decision to make a change. You want to tell us more about that?
Yeah. So it's always difficult growing up, especially I find being a girl, when you're trying to fit in and make new friends. And, my parents got divorced at a young age. I think I was in grade 3 when that happened. And I think that's what really kind of triggered it for me, is I just wasn't quite sure how to deal with the mental emotional side of the divorce, even though I don't recall feeling really upset about it. But obviously my body was telling me a different story. So, you know, being with the stressors of now kind of taking on a bit of a parental role with my younger sister, because we lived with my mom and she was kind of treating the situation like a single parent would. So she was working long hours, and just the little added stressors that happen as we grow up and kind of reach teenagehood and all of that, I just started packing on weight without even really realizing it. And then as soon as you hit high school, that's really when you start to pay attention to how you look, how you're perceived by your colleagues and peers. And I just literally had this kind of light bulb moment where I just flicked the switch off and I said, this is craziness. Like, I was at the point where I actually weighed more than my mom did, and I was in grade 9. So I just said, you know what, I'm going to do this all on my own. And I just completely changed the way I was eating, the way I looked at food. I was coming from eating nothing but breads and carbs and frozen foods and all kinds of takeout and things like that. And I just completely cut it out of my diet. I started working out 4 times a week in my basement, just doing light weights, nothing heavier than a 10-pound dumbbell. And just over time, it took about 6 months, I got down to a really healthy weight, and that really spurred my love of healthy eating, healthy lifestyle. And I think what makes that whole situation a little bit unique is that I did that with my family members still following along the diet that we had prior to my change. So it was just sort of like me carving my own path, totally dedicated, totally motivated to making my health and my appearance better. And then, of course, when you have that confidence about you, everything around you seems to be so much easier. So that really carried me to wanting to become a doctor. And luckily, I found naturopathic medicine and just kind of, again, went for it. And it's a lifestyle and a choice that I've made that I could never see myself doing anything different.
That's awesome. Yeah. And you've got it sounds like a busy clinic, or a few clinics, a few locations.
Yes, we have a few locations, or I have a few locations, and that's just me trying to be, taking care of as many people as I can in as many locations as I can. And the more people I treat, the better a doctor I'm going to be. So that's always been kind of my mindset.
Cool. And you're, do you work only locally with people or you work online? I don't know the rules up there.
So with Canadian naturopaths, we are allowed to treat patients online or over the phone, so long as we've had at least one in-office visit where we can perform a physical examination. So that's the part that's a little bit unfortunate, is that there's so many people that I know that I could treat better, and I just don't have access to them unless they're willing to come out to my practice in Ontario, which for people that are in the States, it's really not that feasible. So that was one of the main reasons why I also wrote the book, is because it allows people to kind of take me home with them regardless of where they are in the world. And I've sold that book to people in Denmark and Australia and all over the globe, and then they get a little piece of me and sort of my philosophy. And I really wrote the book as if I was talking to you anyway. It's not written to be, the most amazing scientific breakthrough. It was simply written for people to be able to get through it front to back, easy reading, lots of images, lots of case studies, and it helps people really kind of reanalyze how they're approaching their health. And if they can find a healthcare practitioner that they connect with near them, hopefully take some of the ideas from the book and present it to that person to maybe do some further investigation or some outside of the box thinking. So hopefully people that cannot necessarily see me as a patient will at least consider looking through the book or purchasing the book so that you can have me kind of treating you and guiding you along your health journey. And then I do offer a free 30-minute consultation with every purchase, so you can at least get a little bit of one-on-one time with me just to make sure that you are on the right track and that you're being supported.
Wow, that's really generous. And then I looked up where you were because I was curious. It looks like you're kind of between Toronto and Niagara Falls, kind of in there.
Yes,
Okay.
exactly.
Cool. So I wanted to, we're going to talk today about parasites and yeast and that kind of thing, but I wanted to first talk a little bit about your theories as I read over the book. And one thing you said in the beginning that kind of struck me was we are not feeling well because of A, like an ill exposure, things like toxins or inflammatory foods, parasites, heavy metal, coupled with B, a deficiency in macronutrients or micronutrients. I just thought that was a really powerful, simple statement. Do you want to elaborate on that?
My whole mainstay with patients or with anybody that's dealing with health issues is I really think about the fundamental things that could be causing the body not to work well. Because we have to remember that the body doesn't want to be diseased, it doesn't want to be ill, it doesn't want to be poorly functioning. It is always striving to find balance, it is always striving to find health. So there's going to be some fundamental things that are involved that are preventing the body from being able to do that. For instance, as you mentioned, is it something that is triggering our body to become ill or diseased? Is it environmental toxins? Is it food sensitivity? So some of the foods that we're eating on a daily basis are actually the main reason why our body cannot catch up and it cannot heal, and the immune system is lowered, our energy is lowered, all of those things. Heavy metals are profound now, found in, cosmetics. Like I know lead can be found in some lipsticks, or mercury with the mercury fillings, or I even did a presentation last week talking about high fructose corn syrup, and the extraction process actually can put small amounts of mercury into the sugar. So we're getting it in, 80% of the North American diet that has high fructose corn syrup. So it's these little triggers that we're being exposed to on a daily basis that, number one, if they're not removed, we're not going to get better. And number two, if they're not removed, we're not going to get better. So we do have to establish what those triggers are. And then the second point was with regards to any sort of deficiencies that are going on in the system. Now, I always use the analogy of your body is like a car, and if we're not fueling it up, that car really isn't going to go very far for us. You might be able to turn the key on, you might be able to get the motor going, but it's really not going to take you anywhere substantial. So if we're not fueling our body with the minerals that it needs to drive enzymatic processes and create energy and provide healing, or the proteins that we so often need to repair and rebuild and create new cells and create new proteins that help the body function, well, how are you expecting your body to work? And, you know, so often I have the number one concern that patients typically have with me is, well, I don't have enough energy. And I think everybody's listening can say, oh, well, I definitely don't wake up bounding, ready for the day. I feel awesome. You know, there's probably a select few, and kudos to you. But for the most part, we are running on empty because we're not getting enough sleep. We're not sleeping well. We're staying up too late, you know, looking at our computers or our cell phones or what have you. Or there's other mental, emotional stressors. And the problem is if we're not giving our body the fuel that it needs to allow us to function through our busy day, well, how long do you expect your body to run for? So these are some of the fundamental, but the most important things that people have to be looking at before they want to establish any sort of major change. And that's why I thought the topic of, you know, underlying infections like parasites or yeast would be really informative, because I do testing for that on every single one of my patients. And it's surprising to say that at least 80% of them will always have some sort of an underlying infection, whether it's just environmental parasites overgrowth, a yeast overgrowth. And unless those things are taken care of, we're really not going to get you to that, you know, 90, 95% optimal health like we'd like to.
Yeah, and the two categories about infection or ill exposure, we'll just say infection here, and then micronutrient deficiency, you know, they really go hand in hand. If you've got an infection you don't know about, you're probably not absorbing your nutrients very well, that kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah, I want to tell a little quick personal story that I've had IBS for a long time, and when I started to learn about nutrition and eat better and do detoxes, it definitely got a lot better, but it was still a little touchy. You know, if I was under periods of stress, or, you know, I traveled and I ate the wrong things. So I had a stool test in the fall that wasn't too clear, and so someone recommended a different one this spring, and I was surprised to find out I had both H. pylori and a pretty strong candida infection.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and this in spite of, you know, I think I have a lot of healthy habits. But yeah, some things, like you said, weren't totally resolved. I definitely wasn't feeling totally like I wanted to, as far as energy and, you know, having to be so incredibly careful with my diet. So I'd love for you to talk more about what our listeners could be looking for are some possible signs and symptoms of an infection in the gut.
Sure. So very obvious, we'll start having digestive upset. So typically signs of diarrhea, really loose, watery stool, or you could even have constipation, because if there is an infection, it's going to create inflammation. When there's chronic inflammation in the body, it tends to dry up the stool. So we're not passing our stools nearly as quickly. But most people will typically complain of just gas or bloating. They're having a really hard time losing that spare time higher around the midsection. And for all intents and purposes, they feel okay, but they're just really struggling to lose that weight, especially in that area. And typically, if it's not hormonal, so, you know, that's a whole nother topic. I find that if the digestive tract is constantly inflamed, or if it's disturbed by an infection, food sensitivity, or what have you, we'll tend to have that big spare tire, because the body is just expanded. It's holding on to water, and that's kind of a way of it protecting itself. So those are some very obvious examples. But some patients will come in to see me and they'll say, I have rashes that kind of come out of nowhere. They don't have any particular reason why. It wasn't from a contact. It wasn't from a new change in their lifestyle. But all of a sudden, they'll get these rashes on their arms, legs. They'll be itchy, irritated. And that can be a sign that there's some sort of an underlying infection as well. Chronic headaches can be related to that. And predominantly, as I mentioned already, is having low energy. So just zero energy, no tank or no fuel in that tank. And it's because the body is using up, as we said, a ton of resources to try to get this infection managed, and it just can't seem to do it. It's just too overwhelmed. So those are the typical signs and symptoms that I see, but it could be just about anything. And that's why getting it analyzed or getting it assessed by a healthcare practitioner is so important.
Okay. Yeah. Tell us some more about the assessment process.
So in my office, I do a technique called live blood analysis, where we actually can take a drop of blood and put it under the microscope, and right directly in the office and on a screen, I can show patients what's going on inside their bloodstream. So we can see an overabundance of yeast, or we can see a lot of environmental parasites in the bloodstream, keeping in mind that it's very microscopic. So we're not going to be seeing things like pinworm or Giardia or ringworm or things like that that you can see more so with the naked eye. If that isn't possible, stool testing is a very, very good way of getting this analyzed. And so there's a lot of different labs in North America that will do comprehensive stool analysis for parasites, yeast, and other bacteria or fungus. What I will say to people that want to get that done is the reason why I find blood testing to be so beneficial is because the blood is where all the nutrients are. That's really where they're getting fed. So to take a stool sample may not always come up the way that we're expecting it to. So people may even want to start doing some sort of a yeast cleanse or a parasite cleanse for about a week or two prior to collecting that stool sample, because then we know that we're starting to get some of those bugs kind of purged out of the system through the stool, because the stool is one of the major evacuation routes that the body has. And then sending that away. And that's just to make sure that we're using our money wisely, because those tests are certainly not inexpensive. So those are the two predominant ones that I do in office and most practitioners will use.
Yeah. So I'm just curious, if you do this live blood analysis and you see some things, do you have to follow up with a stool test for certain of the parasites, or...
Well, that's a great question. So the live blood is more qualitative. It's not quantitative and it's not diagnostic. So for most patients, we can see it. We know that there's definitely an overgrowth happening. And typically, I'm confident enough to start treatment right away. However, that's a great point. If we wanted to identify the exact strain, the exact type, you know, how bad is the overgrowth, then that's where we would follow up with a stool test. Or there's even some blood testing that you can do to analyze this as well.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't think I knew as much about the blood testing. So that's pretty cool. If you can't answer this question, it's fine. But I'm just curious, you said you do test most everybody for this. How often do you see an infection in your clients?
About 80%, I would say, of my clientele that when we do the live blood, we'll always pick up some sort of overgrowth. Now, let me preface that answer with this. Everyone is going to have some bad bugs in them. Everyone's going to have good bugs and bad bugs. I mean, we're an open system. We're being exposed to animals, to children, to dirt, all those type of things. So I don't want people to run off and find the nearest person and they find that there's a little bit of yeast or a little bit of parasites in them and they're freaking out because, you know, it sounds disgusting. But, you know, as humans, we have no problem getting our dogs and cats tested or treated for parasites and worms almost annually. And yet we consider ourselves to be, you know, higher up on the food chain and very elite and so clean, and we would never have these problems. So when I say about 80%, what I mean is everyone's going to have a little bit, but it's when we start to see that it's causing a problem, that it's causing symptoms, that it's definitely an overgrowth or a realistic infection that's happening in the body, that's when we start treatment or doing further testing to really follow up with what it is that we're dealing with.
Okay, that makes sense. And you mentioned in the book where these parasites and infections can come from and how the stomach is supposed to protect us against them. And I think you're right. Like, people think, oh, well, that's only people who are in a very poor country could get a parasite, but yet.
Right. It's not the case.
Yeah. Tell us more about that.
So with regards to let's just talk about North Americans. Most North Americans are living an incredibly busy lifestyle. I mean, things are a lot different than what our ancestors had, you know, especially women, because predominantly I'm treating women. We are now, you know, working and taking care of a household, working and raising children. And that can become very stressful for us because, as emotional beings and thinking about all these things all at once, because we can't turn our brains off. We're not very good compartmentalizers. We think about everything all at once with our emotions, with our physical being, with everything. And the reason why that becomes a problem is because it uses up a lot of energy. Now, you mentioned that stomach acid is one of the best ways for us to prevent against a lot of these infections from happening. And that's a very good point because that stomach acid is really like anytime you eat food, anytime you put anything into your mouth, whether it's kisses from a child, and children get, you know, parasites and bugs all the time, or if your animal happens to lick you on the face or whatever, it's going to enter into the body through saliva and then it's going to go through the stomach. Now, when people are incredibly busy, our stomach acid resources or our stomach acid levels tend to become depleted very quickly. And the reason being is for our body to go from even neutral pH, a pH of 7, to a pH of 0.8, which is stomach acid pH, that takes anywhere from 1 million to 10 million units of energy if we're just going down the logarithmic scale. So think of how much energy you'd have to conserve just to make one molecule of stomach acid. So this is another reason why digestive complaints tend to be so common, especially gas, bloating, inability to break down foods, is because we're not treating some of the other fundamental things like how our body is supposed to function by restoring and renourishing the stomach acid. But if we have adequate amounts of that, then parasites and yeast couldn't possibly thrive in that type of environment. And we would, you know, kind of hit them off at the pass, and we wouldn't have to worry about any overgrowth or underlying infections that way.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I'm going to ask you a little finicky question. I'm just curious your approach. So, H. pylori bacteria, from my understanding, kind of uses stomach acid to protect itself or make some enzyme or something. So it lowers your stomach acid. Do you think that, you know, giving stomach acid without first checking for H. pylori is a problem, or what's your approach to that dynamic?
That's a really kind of tricky question because most people, you know, we always try to think horses before zebras, right? We're always trying to think, oh, well, if you're having low stomach acid, then why don't we just try to restore it? But you're absolutely right. If we're not doing all the right assessments just to make sure that there's nothing else that's preventing us from obtaining optimal digestion, then yeah, it is going to become kind of a never-ending cycle because the H. pylori kind of turns off your body's ability to keep refilling the stomach acid levels. The problem comes is that a lot of medical doctors are also thinking horses before zebras. So they're not necessarily going to be open to testing for what's now in our world. And what I mean by that is the natural, like the naturopathic world, we want to test H. pylori all the time on every single person because we know how common it is. But conventional medicine isn't always up to speed, or they're being regulated by their governing bodies to say, well, this is the logger or this is the protocol when somebody has this, this, and this. And getting H. pylori testing when we want to isn't necessarily always possible. So that's just kind of the struggle with that, is that if you want to get it done through a alternative healthcare practitioner, then you have to be willing to pay out of pocket for these tests. And not everybody necessarily has the means to do everything. So it kind of becomes a bit of give and take, if you will.
Yeah, that makes sense. And we just had a naturopathic doctor from Arizona on. He, Saman Rezai, talking about adrenals. And I asked him, well, you know, why is it that people can't get a saliva test from their doctor? You know, that's always a question I get. Well, why can't I just get this from my doctor? And he brought up the point, well, it's testing more for dysfunction and not a disease that they really treat. So they can't go spending your insurance plan's money on something that they don't really treat. It's not, you know, it's not as common to kind of worry about H. pylori or prioritize it in conventional medicine. So yeah, there's the rub, and I think that's a fair answer. You know, there's every situation is probably a little bit unique in the approach.
But if it was a perfect world, I would get everybody tested for yeast, parasites, fungus, bacteria, H. pylori, the whole gamut. It just isn't a perfect world yet.
Yeah, and as I said about my own health example, I think that, you know, things can really be lurking that you don't realize. Something you talked about to me earlier was yeast, and women also often think, well, that's a yeast infection, a vaginal one, and that's, you know, I don't have one of those. Tell us some of the other symptoms that go with the yeast infection.
So are we talking like a vaginal yeast infection or just yeast
overgrowth? In the body? Okay, yeah, okay. That kind of, go ahead.
So that's a really excellent point. And this is something that when I'm going through my initial intake with patients and trying to figure out what some of the things that we need to address are, you know, I'll ask them, do you have vaginal discharge or do you get recurrent vaginal yeast infections? And for the most part, the answer is no. There's a few that definitely get them quite often. And so as soon as we hear no, then you're like, oh, okay, then yeast can't be a problem. But we're talking about systemic yeast. We're talking about yeast that's in the bloodstream and it's just thriving and thriving and thriving. So more commonly, we're seeing women, and I say women, and I'm sorry to all the men that are listening. I'm just so used to treating women that I just kind of go there. But we'll see people complaining of brain fog, like not poor memory, not having difficulty recall, not thinking about a lot of things, but it just feels like their head is in a complete daze. It's in a complete fog. Constantly craving sugar, like to the point where they will scavenge for sugar. They just need that sugar hit. And then after they eat it, they still want more and more and more. So they're just not satisfied.
Okay.
Weight gain, gas and bloating. You could start seeing signs of thrush. So that's kind of that thick white coating on your tongue, or starting to get some white spots on the cheeks inside the mouth. You could start noticing some rashes developing in areas where there's skin folds. So if there's, you know, under the breast tissue, under the stomach folds, you know, in the thigh area, maybe even under the armpit, that type of thing, you could start seeing rashes developing there, or just having just weird rashes developing on the skin at all. Those are some of the big ones that we tend to really start thinking more about yeast overgrowth as opposed to parasite.
Okay. So we talked a bit about testing and various symptoms that people might be having. Tell us some of your treatment approaches.
Well, with regards to treating either one, you can use really nice antimicrobial herbs, like Pod Darko is sort of like the super antimicrobial herb, and you can get that in tincture form or capsule form. I typically use a lot of high-dosed garlic. We'll use other essential oils or herbs like Oregon grape or berberis. Any of the berberine-containing herbs are phenomenal for that. I know that grape seed extract is used quite frequently with yeast. I personally don't use it all that much, nor do I use a lot of olive leaf extract, but I do see that in a lot of people's formulations. I have no reason to believe that it doesn't help. It's just not something I use. And then I do use a lot of black walnut. Black walnut I find to be wonderful as an antiparasitic, wormwood, things like that. And then as soon as we're done treating the infection, or at least minimizing it, then I really hit people hard with high-dosed probiotics to help restore the good bacteria, to kind of keep things at bay, keep things under control. And then, of course, dietary changes is a big part of this, right? Because just as I mentioned with yeast, they are loving sugar and high sugar containing foods. So we really have to stop feeding them if we want them to go away 100%. So this is where going on a yeast-free, sugar-free diet, I think, is very, very important. Otherwise, what's the point? Like if you keep feeding them and killing them at the same time, that just doesn't make any sense. So What that involves is, and I go fairly moderate. I don't go really severe with a lot of my patients, but anything that has yeast obviously is out. So that's wine and beer and bread products, especially those bread products that rise. And of course, anything that's high in refined sugar or just sugars in general. But I won't go to the extent saying that zero fruit, zero grains, zero this, zero that, because I find it can be a little bit restrictive and I don't want patients to feel any worse than they already do. For some, it's a necessity, but for most, they can get by on just avoiding some of the major food groups that these bugs kind of live off of. And then, of course, we have to make sure that the bowels are moving consistently, because without healthy bowel movements, how are we going to be eliminating a lot of these the bugs as they're being killed off? So if we have to, high doses of magnesium to act as a natural laxative or laxative herbs for a short period of time may not be the worst thing. And then we always want to support this entire process with liver detoxification, because as these bugs are being killed off, they're going to be exposing the body to all of their own toxins and their own little bits, right? Because we are creating kind of like a biological warfare inside the system.
Yeah,
So,
there's a lot going on.
yeah, there's a lot happening. And I don't want to have people just jump right on, taking all of these things and expecting it to be smooth sailing. Like, you will hit that quote unquote sort of die-off period, where for about a week or two, maybe mid-cleanse or mid-treatment, you'll start to feel really sluggish, more gas or bloating, maybe your stools will really change. And that's all kind of part and parcel with this, because these are living creatures that are inside of you and they don't want to die because they've been living large, right? So they don't want to necessarily give up their home or be killed off. So they might fight back a little bit. So this is why doing all aspects of treating the body while we're doing this is so important. So wiping out or reducing the overgrowth, we need to make sure that the liver is completely supported to keep the toxins, eliminated from the body. And then the bowels, of course, are very, very important.
Okay, great. And yeah, I'll share too. This is, I think, a protocol. These protocols are very worth doing, but like you said, they are a little unpredictable. Everyone reacts differently to herbs. I can tell you, my protocol is doing like a tincture with multiple herbs. It was making me nauseous, and so I stopped it, and I think my candida like grew back up.
Right, no
So
doubt. And that's
now,
why,
go ahead.
yeah. And it's so important to not do this on your own. I mean, there's so many books out there, and there's so much literature out there, and there's so many people telling you how to do it, what you should do, but you just can't be doing these things without having anybody in your corner, so that when that type of thing happens, when you start feeling crappy, you don't stop the process. We just find a way to make it work for you, because exactly as you said, it just starts to grow back again, and we really haven't gotten anywhere. So there's a little bit of pain sometimes for long-term gain, but it should never be to the point where your quality of life is being disturbed.
Yeah, but there's some adjustment to make, and I do have help with that. But yeah, I think in the natural medicine world, it can be discouraging because of the length of time and the experimentation. I feel like many people come to me interested in natural medicine. They want that approach, but we are a culture of quick satisfaction, and just when you're feeling frustrated, to just kind of regroup and do something nice for yourself and reach out to someone and get back on the horse.
Yes.
Great. Well, anything we missed that you want to share before we wrap up?
With regards to healing the gut, I just always want people to make sure that they're doing their due diligence and figuring out what the triggers are. Quite often, I know the first thing people will go to is, well, I just need to start removing gluten or dairy, and that's going to make my life so much better. And I come across patients where they're basically living off of zero food because their body keeps getting worse and worse. And you have to always remember that food is one sort of easy and one of the most common triggers, definitely, but it is not the be all end all. And we do have to make sure that we're looking for other possible reasons as to why the gut isn't healing. And removing the trigger is really only step one. You still have to nourish and heal the gut. You still have to re-inoculate the gut with probiotics. And then and only then will you have long-lasting digestive health. You can't skip steps and you can't just avoid food and expect everything to get better. You do have to do all the healing as well. And then as a final thing that I like everybody to know, if they were just sort of like, well, you know, I've done all the work, I'm just curious what my next steps are now, I always encourage people to take at least these three supplements long-term. I think people are always being bombarded with, you need to take this and that and the other thing. And if you want to live a long, healthy life, you have to take, you know, all 10 of these supplements on a daily basis. And I think that gets a bit much. I always recommend at the bare minimum, always be taking a good quality multivitamin, a good quality fish oil, and a good quality greens powder, and you'll be laughing. So that's my biggest piece of advice.
I like that. I like your top three. That's great. And I know you mentioned some other supplements in the book, L-glutamine, vitamin D.
Yep.
They're a little more specific for healing the gut. So yeah, it's a great book. It's really thorough, and you go over lab values, which I think is very valuable. Book is not free on the website. My mistake on that one. But it is a valuable book, and you get this half hour consult, which is a super great bonus. And your website is the Maxim Movement. .com. Anything else you want them to look for there?
On my website, no, there's videos. I have a YouTube channel as well. If you just YouTube Andrea Maxim ND, you'll get sent right to it. And there's a whole bunch of videos on the homepage of the website. Though I do a weekly video newsletter. If people are willing or wanting to sign up to that, you'll see that icon as soon as you enter my website, and then you'll get free health videos from me every week. And every month we do a different topic. So it just so happens that for the month of August, we're talking all about parasites and parasite overgrowth and what to look for. So
kind of
coincides well with this podcast. But if people do have questions or concerns or anything that they'd like to ask, or if there's topics that they want me to cover on my YouTube channel, or if, you know, I have the privilege of coming back on this podcast, if there's a topic that they'd like to hear us talk about, I am always game, because I'm all about educating the public as much as I can.
I can tell. And you do a great job with that. So thanks so much. Yeah, well, I definitely would like to keep in touch with you. And to our listeners, thanks for being here. We really appreciate your support. We really appreciate you sharing the show if you enjoy the show. If it's this topic's, you know, was one that you think someone should know about, or you just have a friend you think you would like the show, just send them the link. And the easiest way to stay in touch with the show is to be subscribed on your podcast player. You are welcome to find out more about me or comment on the blog that will go with this show at bridgetdanner.com. And you're also welcome to rate us on iTunes. That helps us be found in the big, big, big world of podcasts, if your ratings and comments really help. So thank you so much. And until next week, bye-bye.